From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We gave it a good fight. It's God's will. God knows the truth about it all. And the jurors just didn't see what God saw. But we're okay.
You know, Chicago is a very difficult town in which to overcome a presumption that all public officials are doing things wrong. You know, Representative Smith was a freshman legislator. He hadn't even been there 12 months before he started running for office. And for some reasons that we still don't know, he was targeted.
The fact is, when we receive information, as we did in this case, that a public official needs money and is willing to perform legislative acts in return for that money, we'd be grossly negligent not to follow up, to collect the evidence we collected, and let a jury decide whether or not this was the government overreaching and trying to entrap some poor innocent, or whether this was the government who took a public official at his word that he wanted to be bribed and that he needed the money.
That voice belongs to Gary Shapiro, First Assistant U.S. Attorney for Northern Illinois. We also heard Victor Henderson, an attorney for Derek Smith, and now former State Representative Derek Smith, who was convicted of bribery this week. Also this week, Bruce Rauner offers up some ways to cut the state budget. Pat Quinn has to distance himself from some remarks at an endorsement session. And more, that's all ahead on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, State House reporter for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and our guest this week from Illinois Public Radio member station WBEZ in Chicago is Tony Arnold. Tony, thanks for joining us this week.
Good to be here.
Well, you've had a lot of things going on up in your neck of the woods this week, Tony, and one of those was, of course, the bribery conviction. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But people were asking for specifics from Bruce Rauner on a state budget. He didn't offer up a state budget. He offered up a 10-point idea plan of some ways to cut the state budget. Was that the comprehensive budget analysis people were looking for?
I guess it depends on which people you're talking about. It's not that a candidate's necessarily going to unveil their own, you know, $35 billion budget that's going to get into how much the state should be spending on each individual agency or education as a whole. What Bruce Rauner did yesterday was he presented 10 ideas, basically. Some of them include ideas of how to cut state government spending. Some of them are just kind of, I guess you'd call them good government reforms, although I don't know. Some of these are so new, I don't know if other people would call them necessarily good government. But the idea, I think, is here's 10 things we can do to kind of change the direction of the state. And the Quinn campaign, you know, has been pretty harsh on Rauner's ideas here. Some of them include, you know, probably most notably was Rauner, he brought in reporters to this hotel room near Midway Airport on the south side of Chicago. We're at near Midway because he wants to reduce the state, the planes used by state government. And he also brought in some chickens to illustrate this point that Illinois has that there's been money spent on bringing an endangered species of chickens into the state, and it's been flown in, and he's saying this is the kind of excess spending that I want to stop. When you get it behind it, it turns out there's federal money being used to fly the chickens into Illinois from Kansas, and it's the money that does come from the state comes from a hunter's fee, and so there's some dispute there about just how much money, you know, is really going to be saved on these chickens. But the overall point is, you know, Rauner brings in these chickens, has the press conference near Midway Airport, says there's all this excess spending going on, and if you elect me, I'm gonna be the one to stop this.
And so he's going to stop chickens from being flown across the state,
right.
Cutting. And he said that in larger part that he would cut out most of the fleet of the airlines. That's really not going to save much money in the big picture. I guess it sends a little message about what the some would see as waste in state spending, but certainly not enough to make up for the budget. How about some of the more significant things? Because he said these added up to a lot of money.
Yeah, he says he has $1 billion in savings here. The biggest one is, he says, $500 million saved from a state agency that's referred to as CMS, or Central Management Services, that kind of manages different facilities around the state. Although it's not clear on the details of where that $500 million comes from. So there's some questions about that. He says 10% cut in all statewide offices and legislative offices, so the Attorney General, Secretary of State, Comptroller, Treasurer, Governor's Office, 10% cuts. Some of those, the Governor's Office was quick to point out, the Governor's already had some cuts to those offices, and this is just being frivolous now. So those are kind of the bigger, I guess, savings ideas that Rauner unveiled yesterday. Again, I'd say the other thing going on here is that some of the ideas that Rauner's proposing are not necessarily new. They've been talked about before, and they've either not gone anywhere or just not even come up. I mean, sometimes they haven't even been disputed or talked about, debated. And so it's interesting that he's bringing them up in this context. And when asked, you know, these ideas have not gone anywhere in the past, why are you bringing them up now? He said, well, I'm successful at everything I've ever done, and I'm a leader. And that was his answer to these very tough ideas that would be very hard to get any other sort of comprehensive support for. Well, I'm a leader. So that's kind of – you just have to, I guess, take him at his word that he could get this done.
Well, I would say he may be a leader, but he's certainly mathematically challenged. And I would say that this plan is as phony as a $3 bill, but that would be a disservice to $3 bills. The numbers just don't add up. And so the question is this guy totally clueless, or does he expect the citizens of Illinois to be clueless? He's going to save $500 million from Central Management Services. The entire Central Management Services budget is somewhere between $5 and $6 billion. About $5 billion of that goes to pay group health insurance for state employees. The general funds portion, and the state's pressure is on the general funds, is a very small sliver of it. It's less than $100 million. So where does he get these savings? He doesn't spell it out. Are we suddenly not going to pay health care for state employees? That's probably not going to go over very well. He talks about saving money by combining the office of the comptroller and the treasurer. That would require a constitutional amendment. So there's no savings for at least 4 years on that one.
And worth noting, Charlie, that on that particular point, the current treasurer, the current controller, and I believe a number of the candidates, I can't speak for all of them off the top of my head, also favor that, and it still hasn't happened. I mean, this has been something that's been debated for a long time here at Springfield, and nothing's come of it.
Yeah, and at one point there were – to amend the Constitution, you have to get a resolution through the General Assembly, and it has to be the exact same language in both chambers – and it has to be approved by 3/5. There was a time some years ago when Judy Bartopink, a Republican, was the treasurer. The Republicans controlled the Senate. They put through an amendment that would create one combined office and call it the treasurer. Dan Hines was the comptroller, a Democrat. The House was controlled by Democrats. They put through a resolution that would create one combined office and call it the comptroller. And they couldn't agree on the name, so despite the fact that both chambers, by 3/5 majorities, approved the idea of combining the office, neither chamber approved the other chamber's version, so it never made it to the voters. And those are the kind of things. You go over most of his points, and they just don't make sense. He's going to save 10% by reducing the operations for the legislature. Well, the entire budget for the legislative branch of government is in the neighborhood of $90 to $100 million. We have a bill backlog in excess of $2 billion at the end of last month. And so do the math. If you're saving, say, $100 million a year, how many years does it take you to get to $2 billion? It's the kind of thing that, as I say, it strikes me as an attempt to do a publicity stunt and just kind of hope that nobody will look behind the curtains to see the little guy there manipulating the levers, you know, the great Oz.
Well, and that's what you look at the coverage. His campaign, the Rauner campaign, sends out these emails to reporters that are ICYMI, internet slang for in case you missed it, and they put in a bunch of links to news stories. And it's kind of dispiriting because we in the press, I mean, he has a press conference, you show up, you cover it, and how do you fit it into a one-minute-long news story or a 400-word news story in a newspaper? And a lot of these stories say he outlined what he claims are $1 billion in savings, but, you know, I was discussing this morning. You know, you think back to the Blagojevich administration. If you have a politician who is willing to, you know, make these grand statements without necessarily the facts to back them up, it is a real challenge for the press to be able to adequately deconstruct this, you know, within the constraints of objectivity and political balance and everything else. And it takes a lot of resources to go through and go through these things line by line like you just did. And we're here in a half-hour public affairs discussion show. I don't know that that's going to make a difference to the person who's just casually tuning into their TV newscast or even just seeing TV ads.
And that's what the politicians rely on, the fact that people have other things going on in their life. They don't have the time to sit down and actually, you know, look at what the real numbers are and compare them to what this phony baloney statement is. And so they kind of say, oh, yeah, he's going to cut all this money. I'm against waste in government, so he must be the guy.
It's kind of what Pat Quinn has used in the past to climb into the office when he drove a pickup truck around the state when he was running for treasurer. Yeah,
Tony, you were trying.
I should add that, you know, the Pat Quinn's lieutenant governor pick is Paul Vallis, who the day after, you know, Rauner released these 10 points – came out very strongly criticizing these, talking about how this isn't a real plan, kind of what Charlie's been saying. And then the question posed to him was, why are you putting such a strong face on this? Why are you going so hard against these 10 points? And his answer was, because you know Rauner's going to be running ads on this idea saying, I have this plan. I'm saving $1 billion. I can make all these reforms to government. I can get term limits done. I can make sure lawmakers, legislative leaders don't have conflicts of interest and don't have jobs outside the legislature, which is another one of his points. And so you know he's going to be doing these things to say it in these 30-second sound bites or TV ads. And so we need to be the ones who call him out on this and say, this is not real.
So, See, and I would say that Paul Vallis has probably forgotten more about the state budget and finances than Bruce Rauner will ever know. Paul Vallis's resume includes serving as the head of the Democratic Revenue Committee staff. He was head of the forerunner of the current Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. And so he's got a really pedigree. And he's a numbers geek. So he knows this stuff inside and out. From what Rauner showed yesterday, he's got a flair for showmanship, and maybe that goes with his former career, but he doesn't seem to have any grasp of the fiscal reality.
So on a lighter note here, was his jab at legislative leaders prohibiting outside employment designed and that would limit lucrative law practices that House Speaker Michael Madigan and John Cullerton have, we know. Was this his retribution for their political stunt of asking an advisory referendum of should there be a tax on millionaires?
Yeah, I don't know. Keep in mind, Jim Durkin, the Republican House leader, is also employed by a law firm. So you have three of the four legislative leaders who are lawyers here, and he would be affected by this. And in a statement, he said that he supports these ideas of Rauner's. I was able to talk to the Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan's spokesman yesterday, who said that as far as he knows, the Speaker puts in more time working on state issues than just about any governor ever that's been around as since the Speaker's been in Springfield, which is 40-plus years. So his point was these other jobs, these law firm jobs, don't interfere with their, you know, talking about state issues, getting policy done, and he thought that basically Rauner was giving a misguided attempt here to kind of present a good what seems like or sounds like a good government reform here that actually is not going to really change much of anything.
Well, and if you think about it, if you get beyond the political soundbite, these outside law practices are very lucrative. And presumably, the Cullertons and the Madigans and the Durkins pay income tax on the fees that they get for their law practice. So if they can't have the outside employment, their incomes would go down. We'd collect less personal income tax from them. So in reality, instead of helping the state's financial difficulties, this particular proposal would cost the state money. Now, granted, it wouldn't be very much money, but on the other hand, a lot of the stuff that Rauner talked about wouldn't save any money at all.
Well, and I just want to add, you know, on the one hand, point number four is that Mr. Rauner says he would not take any pay or pension as governor. On the other hand, he's saying no outside employment for legislative leaders. This is the choice we talked about this last week on the show. Do you want your politicians who are full-time in politics and this is what they rely on for their salary and they give their full attention to? Or do you want only very wealthy people who are lawyers or investment bankers or real estate developers who have so much outside income and arguably outside interests and potential conflicts of interests? Those are the only kind of people who can run for office. These points seem to contradict each other somewhat.
Now, Pat Quinn, who has used the press conference to his advantage for many years, had his go a little bit awry this week, Tony, when he was trying to show off some endorsements. Some comments came out of the mouths of one of the speakers, and he's had to distance himself from that.
Yeah, it was a press conference designed with to show that he has the support of religious leaders around Chicago. He had several reverends and pastors around him to praise, you know, his campaign and what he's doing. And toward the end, I guess I was not there, but my colleague Alex Keefe was there and said that toward the end of this press conference, one of the reverends who was not invited by the campaign, I should add, but was invited by other reverends there. His name's Reverend Walter Slim Coleman. He goes by Slim. He took the microphone and basically kind of equated Bruce Rauner to really just modern-day Republicans, I guess, to the Ku Klux Klan in sort of a roundabout way. His quote here, I'm just going to read it because it's the fairest way I can do this. He says, Our fight is not with flesh and blood. Our fight is with powers and principalities, and there's an evil. There's an evil that a candidate may seem that he's harmless and he's going to raise up in the state, and we're not going to let it happen. And he's quite obviously talking about Bruce Rauner in that context. Pat Quinn spokeswoman Brooke Anderson said after the fact pointed out that, one, the campaign did not invite him to come speak, and two, that they disagree with his comments and it shouldn't have been said at this event. It's sort of one of those things where you know, Quinn has this idea, this press conference to show the support, and ends up getting a little bit distracted, and people miss the point because of the comment that's made about this controversial comment that's made about the Republican Party and the KKK. I should also add that after the fact, after Coleman had the chance to kind of think about what he said, and he talked to Alex Keefe, and he kind of repeated what he said. He said that we're not suggesting Rauner's a member of the Klan or that there are any Klansmen involved in the campaign, but we are saying that there are forces. I'm just going to read another quote here. We're saying that the forces that are unleashed by the current day Republican Party are very dangerous forces and very racist forces, and we don't want them to take over in Illinois.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Coming up, we'll talk about activities around the courthouses.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and WBEZ's Tony Arnold. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Brian Mackey, we had a lawmaker out of work this week as he had to leave his post because he was found guilty of bribery.
Yeah, the second time in so many years Representative Derek Smith has been removed from the legislature. The first time a few years ago after he was merely arrested and charged with taking $7,000 from a person who turned out to be an FBI informant. They did a big investigation. He was impeached and he was removed, removed from the legislature, basically. Although he had, you know, he won an election and got his seat back, he came back in. But now this week, after he was convicted of federal court, he is permanently removed from the legislature now, still awaiting sentencing. Tony, you were actually there. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what the scene was like during the, you know, the final day of that trial.
Yeah, the trial itself, it went on longer than I think people expected, and sort of the who was supposed to be the landmark witness, the key witness, actually never testified. He was the informant, the FBI informant, who secretly recorded Smith saying things like, "I don't want any trace of the money," and these very incriminating things. He only went by the name Pete, no last name given. We never saw him, and that was kind of the whole reason this trial even happened, is because of this informant. When the verdict was read, it was unanimous, guilty on two counts, one of bribery, one of extortion. And Smith was pretty stone-faced. Afterward, you know, we heard at the top of the show, Smith said that this was God's will and God knows the truth, and the jurors didn't see what God saw. And so it kind of goes along with throughout this whole campaign. What's interesting to me about this is you look to some of these more corruption cases, and you kind of look for it's getting to something bigger about the culture in Springfield, right? It's like, oh, it's those corrupt politicians in Springfield, and it's just another notch on the belt there. This was, I think, a little bit of a different case, though, because it's Derek Smith was brand new to the legislature when he was indicted and arrested. It's not like he had a well-known reputation or anything like that. He wasn't a high-profile lawmaker or anything like that. So the fact that the FBI even went after him is interesting enough. And then throughout the course of this and as it played out, you had these things where just some. I think the reaction from other politicians is just as interesting to the culture of this whole thing than the actual charges. I think it shows a lot that you know, Speaker Madigan voted to expel Derek Smith from his own house. When Derek Smith came back, the Speaker gave him cash to run for re-election this past year. Jesse White, the Secretary of State, who has a very powerful political force in Chicago and actually helped, he got Derek Smith appointed in the first place, really turned against him after he got arrested. And he gave this quote a few years ago. This is a quote that should go down in Illinois politics history here. This is like the, you know, politics ain't beanbag type quote here. Or I don't want nobody sent type thing. He said it to this rally that I attended a while ago, that this is the quote. Someone told me that when you take money, make sure you take enough so you can afford a lawyer. And everyone laughed at this joke and this line. And it's referring to the fact that Smith he took a $7,000 bribe, which when you talk about politicians taking bribes, I think people tend to think of more than $7,000.
That's so the reason he got convicted?
Well, no, this is a great point, Tony. And I think I will say, when people – this is one of those stories, you know, like we said earlier, people don't really follow state government that much. But this is something that really cuts through people who don't normally follow it. Say, what is the deal with that guy taking $7,000 in cash, counting out the bills? And what I tell them is, you know, the real thing that's the problem in state government is not what's illegal. It's the stuff that's legal. So he took $7,000 in cash. But meanwhile, somebody passes a bill for ComEd and goes and becomes a ComEd lobbyist 2 months later, or goes and becomes an executive with ComEd, or leaves the Senate and goes and becomes the director of the hospital Association or something like that. And those are thousands and thousands of dollars more money. It's just not in the form of $100 bills.
Lobbyists,
you know,
who
board.
Got themselves included in the teacher's pension system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and at the risk of sounding like a real cynic, it occurs to me that former Representative Smith had to be the most naive guy on the world to think that anybody would pay him money to get anything done.
Right, because you don't. If you want to get something
done, he's a freshman legislator.
Well, that's the thing.
He's from a totally safe Democratic district.
Right. And you have to want, like, I remember when he was arrested, I
with
think a
no
lot of
clout.
Us, the reaction of a lot of us was, Representative who? There's a Representative Smith?
And that actually came up a little bit, though, Tony. The attorney did have to answer, why were you after a low-level person?
Exactly. The whole defense of this was that Smith wasn't going after this bribe. He wasn't looking for a bribe. He got pressured into it by this informant, Pete, who has his own history with the FBI. And Pete was – the defense says, you know, Pete was under the pressure by the FBI to get something going, to, and so Pete wanted to make something happen, so he kept forcing the issue with Smith. The fact of the matter is the jurors still saw Smith, he still took the money, and so that's why he's convicted. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, the whole reason he took this bribe was to he wrote a letter of support for a grant application. Representatives, aldermen, senators, they write these letters all the time. This is nothing unusual to do this. And so the fact that he would think that he could write this letter in exchange for and $7,000 for a letter that's kind of this normal practice anyway, it's just kind of the whole thing's just kind of weird circumstances.
We also we were talking a lot this spring about a lawsuit filed against the state treasurer, a harassment lawsuit, and that suit was expanded upon, and some more details emerged this week, Brian?
Yeah, so the case was voluntarily dismissed last week with the idea that they could refile. They refiled this week, and they have added the Romney for President campaign as one of the co-defendants. Of course, State Treasurer Dan Rutherford, a Republican, was Romney's Illinois chairman, and there's some additional details that came out in this, like this guy, Edmund Michalowski, who is the former treasurer's employee who is suing Mr. Rutherford for both political, what he alleges is political coercion as well as sexual harassment, alleges that this guy Michalowski says he had to direct college students to do signature gathering for the Romney campaign. When it didn't go as well as he had hoped or wanted it to, Rutherford said he wasn't going to pay him, and Michalowski alleges that Rutherford told him to pay out of your own pocket. And basically his charge is that he felt coerced. He says he was hired because he has a Democrat and he has connections among Democrats, and he alleges that Rutherford wanted to make inroads among them and appear more centrist to set himself up for his gubernatorial bid. Obviously, we're going to be hearing more about this. The Rutherford, the treasurer's office, I should say, did not wish to respond the day these were filed, but I'm sure they will be responding in court as this moves forward.
And from the Chicago Take, anything else you want to add in relation to this lawsuit?
You know, I think from my point of view, it's interesting that they're now that when this was first presented before the primary, Rutherford came out and said, this is obviously a scam. This isn't real. This was done just ahead of the primaries. It's to beat me before it's to get some headlines and take me out of the race. People feel threatened by me during his campaign for governor. And now that the primary is over, it's interesting that the plaintiff's attorneys, you know, Michalowski's attorneys, not only refile this, but kind of double down on what they're charging with him with. Even though, you know, Rutherford's on his way out now, he's not running for election. He's going to be out of politics by January next year. And so the fact that this is still going on and they're filing this lawsuit, it's interesting because Rutherford's point was this is all a scam. This is just to, you know, hit me when I'm at the peak of my campaign. But the fact that they're doing this now that he kind of has nothing to lose, he's not running for election anymore. It strikes me as something that, you know, this might be around for a while. It'll be interesting to see if it gets settled quietly after the fact, or if it actually does go to some sort of either a bench or a jury trial.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Tony Arnold of WBEZ. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.